The Here podcast is all about reclaiming your power and reconnecting with your mind and body. By releasing our stories and the power they have had over our lives and creating a compassionate and supportive community, we can bring love, understanding, awareness, and healing to ourselves and to all who need it most. Join me in saying, enough is enough. I own my power. I am ready for the next chapter of my life, and it will be the most amazing one yet. Content may be discussed that could be distressing to you depending on where you are in your healing journey. If the episode becomes triggering, practice self-care by turning off the episode. If you need to talk to someone, you can always contact your local crisis center or RAIN's national hotline via chat on their website at rain.org or by calling 1-800-656-HOPE. All the links are provided in the show notes. Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining me today. I am very happy and honored to have this guest on the show today. I have Caitlin Brewer, and she is the president and CEO of Darkness to Light. And Darkness to Light is an organization that is so close and true to my heart and really what I'm trying to do in the world as well, but they're just doing it in a massively bigger way. And Darkness to Light is the leading advocate for the prevention of child sexual abuse. And their vision is a world free of child sexual abuse in which adults form prevention oriented communities. So very exciting. I'm going to let Caitlin talk about the great stuff they're doing. But one thing I wanted to mention is they have this program called Stewards of Children. And I actually signed up for it late last year and started it. So I need to carve out time to do it. But this program teaches adults how to prevent, recognize, and react responsibly to child abuse. So I am so very honored to have you on the show and that you took the time to speak with me today, Caitlin.
Oh, it's so wonderful to be on. Thank you so much for having me, Felicia.
Oh, absolutely. So I would love to start to hear a little bit about you and what brought you to Darkness to Light.
Yeah, sure. So I've worked in nonprofits my whole career. I did focus on African development. So I lived and worked overseas for about 8 years and worked on all sorts of fun things, water and sanitation projects, agriculture, health system strengthening, and sort of loved what I was doing, but really missed, being close to my family. My sister gave birth to my nephew and I was missing birthdays. So I decided to come back and utilize all the things that I had learned, running projects and working for nonprofits overseas back home. So I worked for a veteran-oriented nonprofit for a little while, and the headhunter who had placed the president there, sort of reached out and said, we have this position in Charleston, South Carolina. It's a child sexual abuse prevention organization. Are you interested? And, I sort of thought to myself, I am a bleeding heart. I care about all the causes. and so I thought, why had I never really heard or, thought about child sexual abuse prevention as a cause? Like, you hear a lot about the things I used to do, veteran, oriented services and, helping impoverished communities around the world. But we don't ever specifically talk about child sexual abuse and what, the impact of that has on individuals, on communities, on the economy, for instance. And I thought, I like challenges and this is a beyond worthy cause and I like to make waves. So why don't I, take this challenge, move to a beach town and enjoy the heck out of my work. And that's what I've done for 4 years is really, really love every moment of what we've got going on at Darkness to Light.
That is amazing. That is like I said, everything that I hope to bring to the world with my podcast. I also am a survivor of child sexual abuse, and I knew growing up, even when I was struggling, that I wanted to use this struggle and this my story to help others not feel alone, to help others release that pain, and to bring awareness to families of mm-hmm. what they should be looking for. I admire you so much and what your organization is doing.
Oh, thank you. I mean, you know, at first I'll admit I felt a little unqualified for the job, not because I didn't know how to run an organization or fundraise or, you know, all of this sort of back end stuff, but I'm not a survivor of child sexual abuse, and I had never, you know, I don't have a master's in public health, and so I thought, why would the board invest in me? And the reality is I'm the exact person that Darkness to Light wants to reach. You know, I think survivors have had to, similar to what you were saying, have had to carry the burden of raising awareness and spreading information. And there aren't a lot of, or there didn't used to be, a lot of public allies. I think things have changed even during my tenure here. And so now that I've seen it and I know about it, I can't unsee it. And I'm compelled to, you know, convert the unconverted. That this is something that we really need to pay attention to, because it is more prevalent than people could even imagine.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I would love to hear more about what Darkness to Light is doing and what started Darkness to Light, if you have a little bit more about that and some of the statistics that you guys are helping change in the world.
Of course. So Darkness Light was founded in Charleston, which is why I have the pleasure of living here. It was founded by a group of individuals who were survivors themselves, but there was a major case that happened at a private school here that affected Charleston deeply. And many of the people who founded the organization were public health professionals, had masters in social work, and worked at the local child advocacy center. And they, you know, sort of said to themselves, we're so tired of waiting for kids to get to us. We need to be more proactive about, you know, educating communities on how to prevent it. And so when they looked at the landscape of what was out there for education, they realized that we were only teaching kids how to prevent child sexual abuse. And if you understand abuse, you know it's a power dynamic, and you know that, you know, kids are never equally as powerful as those who are hurting them. And so Darkness to Light set out to create, as you mentioned, Stewards of Children, which is a training focused specifically at adults on how it's their responsibility to recognize, react, and report, you know, child sexual abuse. So started off real small here in the Southeast, and has grown into an international organization. We have, I think at the moment, like 13,000 facilitators that wow. roll out our training across the country and in 17 other countries. We also have an online version, which it sounds like you started, and that has been taken by people in over 70 countries. We are also, and I'm super excited about this, recreating Stewards of Children with Indian survivors and Indian experts, because in the States, we estimate that 1 in 10 children by the age of 18 will be a victim of child sexual abuse. In India, it's 1 in 2. And so we've got, you know, a lot of work and a lot of partners who are ready and waiting for our services there. And so we're really excited about launching that probably in the next year. COVID's put a little bit of a halt to some of our progress, but we're getting there. We're forging ahead regardless.
Wow, that is amazing. That is scary. 1 in 10 by the age of 15 here in the States, and then in India, 1 in 2. That is amazing that you guys uncovered that, or that you recognize that and are now creating something to help lower that number and help the people in India. That is amazing.
Thank you. Well, you know, I think similar to me, I grew up and I was taught stranger danger. I was taught good touch, bad touch as a kid. And the reality is we've learned that 90% of kids who are abused by someone that they know and trust. And the unfortunate part of that is it makes it very difficult for those who are close to believe that it's possible that someone they love could potentially hurt a child in that way. We see it all the time, you know, 30% of that 90% is a family member, and then 60% is sort of a, you know, community leader or, you know, an individual that the family, you know, is close with. And it's hard. I mean, you know, you go to church and you believe that your minister, your priest is telling you all the things to make your life better. And that person then, you know, hurts you. Your coach is there teaching kids how to be good athletes and good people. And then, you know, quietly is hurting them. I mean, these are really hard concepts for people to wrap their minds around. But the reality is kids do not lie about this. They don't make this stuff up. And a lot of times they're describing things that have never been, you know, taught to them. So you're hearing what happens to them seems a little overwhelming for a parent because you just don't want to believe it. And that's your sort of first instinct, which is the exact wrong instinct, because we know that when parents or a trusted adult tells the kid, you know, I don't believe you, it actually compounds what trauma they're experiencing and often allows the abuse to continue.
Right. You know, you're absolutely right. And you'd mentioned here that children don't lie. I always, whenever I see something, like I saw something on Facebook last year and somebody was saying, oh, my daughter told me that her friend said that she was being abused, and I don't know what to do because I don't want to report it if it's not true, because what if the kid's making it up and now I've gotten the family in trouble? And I responded, that's not, you don't need to worry about that. You report it, and then the authorities and everybody else that would be involved will figure out what's going on. Because at the end of the day too, if a child, so I agree that they don't make this up. If by the chance a child made something up, there is something deeper there, because why are they saying that in the first place? So it should be reported.
And I think that's exactly right. You are not, you know, most people are not the experts, right? There are experts out there who are trained to figure out what's going on. They're called forensic interviewers, and they sit with the kids and they take copious amounts of classes to understand the best way to get the most accurate information. Those forensic interviewers sit at child advocacy centers, which are, you know, beacons of services, whether it's police services or social workers. You know, those people are there to help that process if there is something. But to get there and to get those kids the help, you know, adults have to have the courage. I always say, if you saw or heard that someone was murdered by someone else, you would not second guess yourself as to whether or not you should call and report that information, because it could help to, you know, the police finding the perpetrator or the, you know, the murderer. So it's no different when a crime has been committed against a child, whether it's physical, mental, or sexual abuse. We have to think about putting the rights of the child first, because they legally don't have as many rights as we do as adults. And so the onus and responsibility of reporting has to sit on us.
Absolutely. I love that. And you had mentioned when we first started talking, that you were like, who am I? I'm not a survivor of child sexual abuse. Who am I to run this organization? And you're like, you know what? I'm exactly the person. And I commend that, because we can't just be we can't just turn away and look away. And that was something that really inspired me to start this podcast, is because I would see For example, if I posted something, and I had mentioned this before, so my listeners will be like, oh, Felicia's always talking about this. But I had posted something on social media about, you know, exercising. And everybody is like, that is great. Congratulations. And there's all these likes and everyone's happy. And then I post something about how to, it was actually something from Darkness to Light. There was this little ad on educating adults on how to prevent child abuse and how to recognize it. And I posted it. I shared it with everybody. I was really excited to share this information. I had like 2 likes. And it upset me so much because I know it's a hard subject, but it is so much harder for the children that are going through it than for you to just learn about it and understand how to recognize the signs so that you can be an advocate for all the children in your life, not just yours, but any child that comes into your life.
It's so hard. I mean, I am so aware of how little people want to talk about this. I will go and speak at conferences and other rooms, and other presenters have packed chairs. It's standing room only. And I'll stand in front of 10 people. And those 10 people matter, right? So right. I'm glad I'm there. I'm glad I'm talking to them. I'm glad I'm listening, because we are building a small army of people who want to help protect kids. But I do understand. And, you know, Darkness to Light feels the exact same way. We've really tried to figure out the best way to meet people where they are. Particularly with a topic where a lot of the victims and survivors have not come forward. And so their reactions are a little bit more hesitant to engage in the information because they potentially haven't dealt with, you know, things that happened in their own lives. So we practice a few different things at Darkness Light. We practice empathy, and we practice grace, and we allow people to come to us when they're ready. Because this does take a while to sort of wrap your head around. And I think, you know, we're in a different place than we were when I started. The media has covered, you know, some of the more recent issues and trials quite regularly. And we are receiving, you know, much different engagement levels than we did even when I first started. So my advice and my, you know, my empathy to you is that don't give up. You know, keep sharing and you know, have some understanding, I think, and not that you don't, but that people are scared. They're scared to, even they might be reading it, but they're scared to maybe publicly react.
Oh, that is a beautiful way to think of it. I didn't think of it that way at first, that they are looking and maybe they are reading it, but they're not, you know, verbally or publicly saying something. Oh, thank you for that. So I would love, let's talk a little bit about those, because you had mentioned Stewards of Children, the different things that Darkness to Light, your organization, is doing to educate the communities and inspire people to take action and be advocates for children.
Sure. So we have, as you've well mentioned, a lot online that you can share for free. During COVID right now, we have a one day at a time campaign that we've been posting about. And, you know, I think it goes back to what I was saying about you, sometimes you just got to take things like a small step at a time. And what are the things that you can do every day, both to keep your mental health up and, you know, your world from crumbling while we're all kind of figuring out what life looks like now. But pre-COVID, and you know, I can talk a little bit more about the COVID training as well in a minute, but pre-COVID, we basically have a train-the-trainer model. So we train our facilitators, who can be anyone. Doesn't have, you know, it's a scripted training. You don't have to have a degree. You know, you can be a community leader, a YMCA lifeguard. Like, it doesn't matter. You can take an 8-hour facilitator class, and then you're able to roll out Stewards of Children training in your community. And Stewards of Children is a 2-hour training, and it brings you basically through 5 steps that help you do the exact things that we talked about earlier, the recognizing, responding, and preventing child sexual abuse. So the 5 steps just quickly are: step 1, where you learn the facts. if you don't understand it, then you can't, you know, recognize it and end it. Step two is to minimize opportunity. And really what that means is creating safe spaces, because more than 80% of sexual abuse cases occur in isolated one-on-one situations. So how can you reduce, you know, those isolated moments? Step three is to talk about it. And I know that this is everybody's biggest fear, but we have to talk about our bodies. We have to talk about what sex is. We have to talk about what, you know, appropriate boundaries are with children. It's our responsibility as adults to, you know, to have those open and honest conversations, because that's what builds trust in the child and you. And God forbid something does happen, they'll know who they can go to have a conversation about something that happened to them. Step four is to recognize the signs. And so if something does happen, you know, kids can start to begin to react differently. They might not want to be in the room with a certain person. They might start growing out their hair or wearing baggy clothes. A good student might become a really bad student. A really bad student might become a really good student. So there's a lot to sort of look out for and think through. And the last step is to react responsibly. So, you know, only 4 to 8% of reports are of sexual abuse are false. And so, as I've mentioned before, it's our responsibility to you know, treat all disclosures as truthful. And, you know, and to make sure that you report and that you tell the individual who's disclosed to you that you believe them and that you're going to help them, and that you can't keep what they've told you secret, because it's important that, you know, the person who's hurting them doesn't hurt anybody else. So that's the basic premise of Stewards of Children.
That is wonderful. And something about that, and I would love to know what you think, because there was one of my guests talked about her story, and she was saying how she had told her best friend and begged her best friend not to say anything. So, of course, her best friend didn't, right? She didn't want to betray her. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we should be teaching our children, everybody should be teaching their children these things, not only to protect themselves, but for if they recognize it, something happening with the friends that they hang out with.
That's so important, because a lot of individuals, when they come out as adults, as survivors, often say that they have, one, either not told anyone or told a friend but begged them not to say anything. And that friend trusted, you know, did exactly that. They didn't say anything because they thought that they were being a good friend. And in fact, they are. You know, if a friend tells you not to say anything, then it's hard to sort of go against that person's trust. There's going to be bad feelings because, you know, you told someone something in confidence. But the reality is, you know, we don't like secrets like that. We like surprises. Surprises are good things, but secrets are not, particularly when it comes to anything, you know, sexual. And so I think if you can teach your kids, you know, that surprises are okay, but secrets aren't, it helps them understand that maybe if someone's asking you to keep a secret for them, that it's probably not safe to do so.
Oh, I really like that distinction. So I know when I have three daughters, and when they were growing up, I had told them no secrets. If someone asks you not to tell me something, what do you do? And they would go, tell you. And I'm like, yes. And then I didn't want to make a distinction. Well, if it's a birthday or if you were asked to keep a secret about my birthday present, I like didn't make any distinctions, because I didn't want them to start second guessing. But I like that. A surprise, like, you know, like a birthday surprise or something is okay, but not a secret.
You know, we bought mommy a Mother's Day gift, and we're going to keep it as a surprise, and she'll know. Because if someone, you're exactly right. You know, people who abuse children use that, you know, it's our little secret against them, and kids feel special. But if they have the awareness that they need to sort of think through, oh, maybe a secret with this person isn't a good idea, they might be willing to come and tell you in the early stages that someone's asking them to keep secrets before anything happens.
Yes. Yes. And all of these steps for the audience, for the listeners, all of these steps are so easy, minus the talking about it. I understand that that's difficult, but all these other steps are so easy to just understand and learn. And for you, learning these steps would be easy, but for somebody else, for somebody you're protecting, it would be life-changing. Mm-hmm. I just urge people to really take advantage of what Darkness to Light has to offer and be advocates for the children. I would love to hear, and because I know it's a big thing and it's scary, you had mentioned that 80% of abuse occurs in isolated events, which mm-hmm. makes a lot of sense. So how, it's scary to think about that with COVID going on right now.
Ooh, yeah, you are speaking to my soul right now. So we kicked into high gear as soon as we figured out that there were going to be, you know, shelter in place orders across the country and around the world. And we put out, maybe 2 months ago now, 2 months ago must have been, at least 2 months, a new COVID training. It is built off of those five steps that I talked to you about, but it focuses on step 1, 2, and 3. And the reason why is because we recognize prevention looks very different now that children are potentially sheltering in place with their abuser. And at first it was just sort of a hunch that this might happen. And now we have reports coming out from hotlines and hospitals that are confirming our deepest fears that the severity and the frequency of abuse that children are experiencing is heightened. And we are also finding that more minors are reporting on the hotlines, which is not normally the case. So just to talk a little bit about how do we find out about abuse?
Yeah.
52% of reports are actually reports done by educators and administrators at schools. So you have effectively taken away 50% of the chance that a child's, you know, experience is going to be reported and something's going to happen to help them by taking away the refuge of educators and administrators. You are, you know, there's the economic and financial stress that's going on that is increasing abuse from the parents who are, you know, abusive to begin with. And the there is no sort of after school activities or outlet for these kids to be able to, you know, escape. And so it's just 24 hours a day with those who are hurting them. I watched PBS NewsHour this morning, actually, and you know, the doctor was talking about the types of physical abuse that's being seen is far more severe than previous. And so my heart is like broken right now. And I think we need to get really innovative. So what are we doing? We put out this COVID training. We've done a lot of blogs about online safety for educators. We are asking, you know, Congress for money with a group of other organizations to try and, you know, reduce the amount of layoffs and furloughs in child advocacy centers and increase prevention education, you know, access during this time. I know that there are, you know, countless people across the country who are really, really focused on this. And so while it's bad, and it is bad, we are more than ever dedicated to making sure that we're protecting and reaching out to kids and those that are taking care of them as much as we can.
That is great, this work that you're doing. And as you're talking about this, I'm thinking for everybody out there, and I know I may have said this in a different way, but it's so important to not worry about being nosy, because it seems if the child, especially if it's within that in the child's household where they're mm-hmm. being abused, that everyone in that household might be, you know, keeping that secret or turning a blind eye. So if you're on the outside and you see anything that may be concerning or it just doesn't seem right, that it is just, it's just better to report it and be safe than sorry. And so for them, if somebody sees that something isn't right, how do they go about reporting something like that? Do they just call the police, or what would they do?
Call your local authorities. Absolutely. Call your local authorities and report. There are, if you want to talk it through before you take the step of calling your local authorities, you can call our hotline. It's 1-866-4-LIGHT, and you can ask for advice on what to do. And, you know, because this is, it's intimidating, and that's a free service. You don't have to worry about paying for that. Again, that's 1-866-4-LIGHT. If you are in a crisis right now and you cannot pick up the phone and make a call, we also have a crisis text line. You text the word light to 741-741, and there are people in the crisis text line who will hopefully help you figure out, you know, where your local resources are and how to put a plan together. They have access to our COVID information, but you can also go on our website to find our COVID training. Again, we typically charge for Stewards of Children, but the COVID training is free right now. It's on our webpage. We also have a safety exit. So if for whatever reason you need to exit the website quickly, you just click up at the top of the website and the website will close immediately.
Wow. You know, I was on your website earlier this morning and I saw that safety exit and I wondered what that was. That is so thoughtful and amazing, everything that you have put. I wish I had this when I was a child, that everything you've put into this. This is amazing.
I'm so sorry you didn't.
Oh, I'm happy that it's out there now and that I can help and make a difference. One of the things I noticed on your site as well is that, and it's something that I'm doing or hoping to do with this podcast, is sharing your story and how important sharing your story is. And you've mentioned a lot of different things, but especially people might think, oh, these are the typical, you know, this is how you sexual abuse occurs, maybe by these types of people or in this type of way. And something that's really amazing about sharing your story when you're ready, depending on where you are at in your healing journey, is you hear all these different ways that people were abused, and it opens up your knowledge to all the ways it could happen. And I feel like it just makes you more aware. It makes you more aware of signs to look out for because of how children responded, how people are sharing their story, of how they responded, how it affected them, and how the abuse was allowed to occur. And I noticed you had that where you could submit your story.
Absolutely. I mean, that's part of the, as you rightly put it, it's part of the journey. And not everybody's there yet. Not everybody wants to sort of stand up and say, I'm a survivor and this is what happened to me. And that's fine. But for those who are interested, it's really important for us that we show that if something does happen, you know, there is light on the other side. You know, that's where what our name means, is that, you know, out of darkness, you can find light. And it's really important that, you know, survivors feel that they're not alone. And, you know, there is a community of both ally survivors and allies who are ready and waiting, you know, to listen and to be there.
Yes, absolutely. I love that, because out of the deepest darkness that you're experiencing, there is light. And you said it perfectly. You also, by sharing your story, if you want to, if you feel that calling to do so, you are letting other people that aren't ready know that they're not alone. And I know that was tremendously impactful for me when I was young. It was through a book. I read A Girl Interrupted. And that book is when I was like, oh, this girl is experiencing some of the same feelings that I am. And it was just a book. I didn't know who this girl was, but she was a real person. And I felt not alone just knowing that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've had people watch Stewards of Children and say, this is the first time in my entire life I've felt seen. And, you know, I never thought that I would be open about being a survivor, but I see now that there's two sides to this. There's the shame and there's the pain and there's the trauma, but there's also the ability to do something with that and to help. You know, no one prevented what happened to me, but I could potentially prevent something from happening to someone else. And that's, you know, that's it's a different kind of purpose in my life. It's not just about healing myself, it's about healing us as a community.
Yes. Oh, you said that perfectly. That's exactly why I wanted to dedicate my life to this, is so that I could help others. That is wonderful. I would love to know before we part, what are, because you have many ways that people can get involved to help. So if you can share some of those different ways that they can get through darkness to light.
Sure. I think, as we talked about earlier, the best thing you can do is share our materials. Follow us on social media. Don't be scared. You never know who needs to read what we're posting. Similar to what you said, who knew that you picking up Girl Interrupted, you know, that author might never have thought that it was going to have the impact that it did, even on just one individual. And I think, you know, when you're sharing that on social media, it's so much more than just a social media post. You really could be having an impact on someone. I think it doesn't seem like much, but it's a lot. We have a facilitator course right now. We are sort of paused a little bit on some of our facilitator trainings because those are in person, but we're figuring out how to get that done in a COVID world. Go online and take the Stewards of Children training or the new COVID training. Those are really, it's $10 for the Stewards of Children training, but the COVID training is free. And I think the final thing is just think about one behavior that you could adopt every day in your life, a standard operating behavior that is a prevention-oriented behavior. So for instance, if your kids go to soccer practice and you show up every single day at the same time, maybe show up sporadically, show up in the middle, watch a little bit of practice, show up, you know, on time, be unpredictable, you know, and there are other small, tiny behaviors that don't accuse anyone of doing anything wrong, but are preventative in nature and allow your kid to feel safer, whether they know it or not. So I would say those are definitely things that I would do. And also you can sign up for our emails. We have lots of tips and tools, and you know, we send out tons of information all the time. So if you're not ready to commit to a training, you know, sign up for our emails and learn all about what we're doing.
One prevention-oriented behavior a day. I love that. That's easy. That's easy for everybody to do too.
Yep.
And just like you mentioned earlier, I know that I'm going to share, and not get discouraged if I don't feel that people are interacting with the materials like I hope they would, because you're right, they may be reading it and saving it and doing more research and just not saying anything about it. And that is very inspiring.
Well, I'll tell you a short story. You know, because we're on the prevention side of the house, I don't often get to see, you know, the impact that we have, because people take our trainings with countless organizations across the country. And so some days, you know, you have a rough day and you're sort of like, is what I'm doing, you know, making a difference, like really making a difference. And I was on another podcast maybe 2 years ago, Jessica Mernanda's 10 episode series. And on the 10th episode, she sort of recaps the podcast season. And she read a letter that a listener sent to her about my episode, about how she came out as a survivor and she had the courage to talk to her sisters and realized that they were also survivors, and they are now going to therapy together, and their lives are changing. And I was driving down the road, and I kid you not, I start bawling, and I had to pull over, and I left Jessica like the most emotional voicemail. I was like, how dare you not warn me? And I just, you know, I think that's sort of, I tell that story to say, you know, you don't know what kind of impact you're having on people, but you are having an impact. So the fact that you dedicate your time to this, is a big deal. And, you know, even if you save one person, it's all worth it. Like every moment you tirelessly put this podcast together, I think you're brave, and I think that you are going to change people's lives. So I'm so honored to be on today, and thank you so much for thinking of us.
Oh my gosh, Caitlin, you're gonna make me cry. Thank you so very much. When I reached out, I thought, oh, they're probably so busy, and I am like, but you know what? I so badly want to talk to them. I want to have them on the show. So I just reached out and was so elated, excited when I got the response that you would love to be on the show. What
Of
you guys
course.
are doing is so incredibly important, and I commend you for everybody as a part of your organization for caring so much to protect children and to end child sexual abuse, and especially people like you were saying, I have not even had any experience with this, but you know what? I care deeply for all of these children, and I want to make an impact on the world.
No, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Thank you so very much. I want to
Thank
make
you.
sure before, is there anything else that you wanted to share with the audience? I like to make sure that I give a little time because, well, I just want to make sure I never end the call with anybody feeling like they left something unsaid.
No, not at all. I think I always leave the message that if you haven't come out as a survivor yet, it's okay. But know that you're not alone. And know that, you know, darkness to light, stop it now, you know, prevent child abuse in America. We're here and we have, you know, resources and hotlines, and you should feel that there is light on the other side. So we're waiting whenever you're ready.
Oh, thank you. Oh, this is an emotional conversation for me. This is just so special. Everybody listening, I'll make sure all of the numbers, all of the information that Caitlin shared, all of the links are in the show notes. I'll have them on my website as well. I'll post all of those links on the resource page so that you have access to those on your phone or wherever you're accessing that information. And Caitlin, thank you again so very much for your powerful message, for the work you do. I am so honored that you are on the show, and thank you again for your time today.
The feeling's mutual. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Have a beautiful day.